Hello, and welcome to the Legion Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics. This is Legion Spotlight number 34, and I'm continuing my look at the Legion of Superheroes with the comics published in 1966. Next up is Adventure Comics 350 and the Outcast Superheroes. It was released on September 29th, 1966. The story was written by E. Nelson Bridwell with art by Kurt Swan. It's a 12-page story with a full-page interior cover and a third of a page ad on the final page of the story. And that interior cover has this great shot of Superboy and Supergirl walking out the door, tear on Supergirl's face, they've been expelled, and then the other panel on it is two people coming in saying, and we're their replacements. And these look like medieval knights with like a robotic helmet kind of a thing on. It's a very interesting look. Anyways, what happens in the story is Superboy and Supergirl are summoned to the 30th century for an emergency Legion meeting. We see Superboy arriving, and he's getting weakened, gets into the headquarters, which is lead-lined. He's doing all right. What we learn is that all of Earth has been surrounded by a cloud of green kryptonite dust. Not just any kryptonite dust, mind you, but this dust is magnetic. It's been attracted to the Earth's magnetic field. It's going to remain there for about 2 years, they figure. Cosmic Boy tries to repel the dust, but his magnetic powers are no match for the entire Earth's magnetic field. The Kryptonite's also able to withstand Sunboy's heat, the Lightning Lad's lightning. Element Lad tries to transmute it to helium, but that starts like a sparkling kind of a weird thing, so he's like, oh, let's study this first. And Brainiac 5 looks at the sample and discovers that if Element Lad had used more power and transmuted more of it, it would have caused a chain reaction that would have destroyed the Earth. So the Legion has tried to get rid of the kryptonite. They can't. Superboy and Supergirl, they just can't stay in the future for the next 2 years. So they get honorably discharged from the Legion, because I guess a 2-year hiatus is out of the question, or, I don't know, lead-lined outfits were out of the question? Whatever. Which is particularly ironic, given that interior cover having two people in armor. So one of the obvious suppositions is those two are Superboy and Supergirl, but just hiding their identity behind kryptonite-protecting suits. As part of this discharge process, the Legion uses the time cube, because again, the time bubbles have been destroyed, and, well, actually, one was destroyed by Universo last issue, the other was just stolen, they never got it back, and apparently they never bothered to have Superboy or Supergirl build them new ones, but I don't know why, that just boggles the mind. They use the time cube to retrieve Superboy and Supergirl's Legion statues. The Legion's gathering up various mission mementos and stuff, and all these souvenirs are put into a vault to be returned to Superboy and Supergirl if and when the Legion's able to bring them back to the 30th century after the kryptonite cloud passes and all that kind of a stuff. But the whole thing is they're worried that Superboy and Supergirl would let loose accidentally some secret about the Legion that could be used to harm the Legion, you know, 1,000 years later, whatnot. Now, one thing that's very interesting when they're gathering mementos and all that stuff is Brainiac 5 and Supergirl kiss. We rarely see that sort of a thing in the comics. I mean, there's certainly, oh, so-and-so's got a crush on so-and-so or whatever, but to see it that blatantly there was kind of interesting. Now, not only can they not have their mementos of the various missions and stuff, but the Legion doesn't want Superboy and Supergirl keeping their memories either. So they need to implant kryptonite capsules into the brains of Superboy and Supergirl in the area of the brain that stores their memories of the Legion, so they'll forget, because apparently just telepathy's out of the question, I guess. And you got two invulnerable Kryptonians, how are you going to do brain surgery? And why are you going to do brain surgery is another question, but they solve this by having Shrinking Violet take the capsules, shrink down, go inside them. And this is basically, it feels like a riff on Fantastic Voyage, the movie, where she's going in and we get a little bit of her navigating through, getting attacked by the antibodies after she's placed the kryptonite capsule, because that's what was protecting her and stuff. And so they got to get Superboy to cry to get her out and all that stuff. And that's just a couple of pages and stuff. It's not the crux of the story, but it is interesting the similarities it has to that movie. Now, interestingly enough, as I said, this was released on September 29th, 1966. Fantastic Voyage, the movie, was released on August 16th, 1966. So you're thinking, clearly, they couldn't have based it on the movie. They wouldn't have had time. Well, that's true. However, a novelization of the movie was written by Isaac Asimov, who had some issues with the plot of the movie, but that's regardless. And an abridged version of it was released in the February 26th and March 12th issues of the Saturday Evening Post in 1966, 6 months before the movie was released, because there were delays on the movie and all that kind of a stuff. So it is conceivable that E. Nelson Bridwell easily, I think, could have come across the Saturday Evening Post, could have read the thing, and could have used it in this thing. I'm not saying they lifted it, I'm saying they were inspired by it, potentially. Which, again, is kind of wild, given the comic came out weeks after the movie debuted. So, they get through all of that, they do a little hand-waving of, yep, she's got to go into Supergirl, but let's give her some spare kryptonite so she can get out safely. And after they have done this kryptonite implanting into the brains of Superboy and Supergirl to squash their memories of the Legion, before Superboy and Supergirl go back to their own time, they ask to name their own replacements. And of course, Superboy and Supergirl, Legion's not going to say no. And they say, great, we can't tell you who they are, but they're going to call themselves Sir Prize and Miss Tyrius. And you got to promise us you're not going to use Ultra Boy's Penetravision or Saturn Girl's telepathy to uncover their secret identities. Admit them without the usual tests. Yep, they're going to be wearing masks, but, you know, kind of a trust us sort of a thing. Now, all of that's a little suspicious. I don't know when they would have had time to set all this up. And you'd think they would have made this request before the memory wipe process, but they don't. They finish that conversation up. Supergirl gets sent back to her time in 1966, which is, again, sliding time scale. It would have changed later, whatever. Superboy gets sent back to his own time, and right as that's starting to happen, he's starting to forget who the Legion is, even though he's, like, there with them. We then get a quick shot of both Supergirl and Superboy in their respective time frames, having completely forgotten they'd gone to the future of the Legion, etc. And then we're back at the Legion clubhouse. An alarm goes off. It's, I guess, the doorbell or whatever it sounds like, because lo and behold, there's Surprise and Mysterious at the Legion's front door. And again, they look like a cross between 60s-style kind of clunky robots and medieval armor, which is, again, kind of a wild look. Although very drab, metallic kind of a thing. And Master and Mystery characters are nothing new to the Legion. We've had a couple of them that way. We had Mon-El posing as, I think it was Marvel Lad or Legionnaire Lad, I guess it was. Mystery Lab was Element Lad, if you include the adult Legion. We had two other people that were kind of decked out in armor and whatnot that turned out to be the descendants of Luthor and the fifth dimensional imp Mixoplick, or however you would correctly pronounce that. So again, this is nothing new for the Legion, and this tradition continues on later, including, I think most notably, Censor Girl in 1985 after Crisis and such. So all of this is basically to set the stage of, yep, Superboy and Supergirl not going to be with the Legion for a bit. We've got two mystery characters that we're about to get introduced to. End part one. Unfortunately, there's a part two in this issue, but again, quite a bit was set up, but a lot of it was all for the purpose of getting two characters out of the Legion, which I think was a big deal at the time. I was aware of Surprise in Mysterious, but I have not actually read this story before, and it not only continues into a second part here, but two parts into the next issue as well. So, we've got a couple of first appearances, Surprise and Mysterious being among them, and the key event of Superboy and Supergirl getting honorably discharged from the Legion. So, once again, that's the Outcast Superheroes from Adventure Comics 350. Next up from Adventure Comics 350 is Meet the Legion, The Origin of Chameleon Boy. Now, this is a third of a page text feature on a text page that has bits of Legionnaire business as most of it, which is just people, in this case, sending in suggestions for Legion members, or at least people to try out, and in many cases, clearly not get into the Legion, because some of them are a bit wacky. Anyways, it's a typewritten page. Bottom third of it is this text feature on Chameleon Boy. We learn he's from Durla. The dominant race evolved the ability to shapeshift using their antenna, which can examine and analyze any person or object so they can take that shape. And the process is described kind of like radar, with invisible emanations from the antenna going out and returning as distinctive sound waves picked up by their large ears, which implies the process might not work if they're shapeshifted into a form that doesn't have the antenna or the large ears. And, I mean, the antenna has always been a signature part of Chameleon Boy's look. The ears, while Spock or Vulcan-like, never struck me as being gargantuan or anything in most instances, but anyways. They mention that other races are often suspicious of the shapeshifting Durlans, which makes sense, because I think shapeshifting instigates paranoia. What was kind of interesting was Chameleon Boy's name is given as Reed Daggle, R-E-E-D, instead of Rep Daggle, R-E-E-P. So I don't know if that was a typo, if they just hadn't solidified on the name yet. Actually, it's given both ways. So it's definitely a typo, because at the bottom of the first column, it's Reed Daggle, and at the end of that same paragraph, it's Rep or Reep Daggle, and I'm not seeing a third appearance to be a tiebreaker. Nope, Reep is used another place. So the Reed Daggle in the first instance is indeed a typo, which happens, but kind of interesting, kind of funny. It does mention he's the leader of the Legion's espionage squad. I do wonder about any superhero team that needs an espionage squad, but it mentions he frequently spies upon criminals and stuff while disguised as a member of their gang or a piece of furniture or whatever, so there is apparently a heroic use for espionage versus it seem more kind of criminal or whatever. Anyways, this is just a minor text feature. They've been tossing these in various issues. Sometimes a couple of interesting nuggets come out in these things, and I really wish these sorts of text features were included in more modern comics. I think it's just a fun way to give a little more background on the characters and stuff. So, once again, that's Meet the Legion, The Origin of Chameleon Boy from Adventure Comics 350. Next up from Adventure Comics 350 is Part 2, The Devil's Dozen. Same creative team, E. Nelson Bridwell, Kurt Swan. It's an 11-page story continuing from the first part, and this again does continue into the next issue. It seems that Surprise and Miss Tyrius have been inducted into the Legion in the brief gap between chapters, because it doesn't seem like more than, frankly, a couple of minutes pass or whatever, but they have that just kind of taken care of, and they get a call, there's a bank robbery, Legion's going to go to help. I mean, remember back in the days when heroes would stop bank robberies? Seems far-fetched these days. Anyways, the team that's going to go deal with that is Colossal Boy, Lightning Lad, Chameleon Boy, Saturn Girl, and Invisible Kid, and Surprise asks to tack along. So they say, sure, why not? Maybe you'll learn something, kid. And he's like, well, maybe you will, too. And it's interesting because Feralad mentions that while he wears a mask, he didn't conceal his identity from the Legion. Now, Feralad's only been a member since Adventure Comics 346. Now, how do I know this? One, I read it recently, but more importantly, because yes, I'd probably already forgotten, it says it here in a footnote. Now, we're in issue 350 here. There's not a whole lot that's transpired in those couple of issues. And I know last Legion Spotlight I said that Feralad had a disfigured face because of the mutation that lets him turn into living metal. After thinking about it some more and skimming through these issues again, I think that was the post-Zero Hour version of the character, not this original version of the character. At this point, we really don't know much about Feralad at all. We have no idea why he wears a mask. All we know is that he says he's a mutant and that he can turn his body and costume into lead. Not entirely sure how the mutant power would do the costume too, but we'll let it go. That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I personally believe all superpowers ought to come with kind of a grace field or whatever. So if you can burst into flames, your clothes are going to survive that, so you can use it in polite company. And just certain things that either are granted by the Comic Code's authority stamp or what have you. But again, I'm fine with his costume turning into lead. But again, I don't know why he's wearing a mask here. Now, I have heard that the original intent was for this character to not be another Caucasian member of the Legion, as so many of them are, but this was the 60s, and that may have been a little more progressive than they were ready to do at the time, but masking the character gave the ability for that to be a reveal later had they wanted to. So, at this point, Brainiac 5 is speculating that Surprise and Mysterious in these armored outfits, for all he knew, they could be robots. So, interesting theory. Now, instead of going off and seeing what's going to happen at the bank robbery, we roll back a couple of hours so we can learn about Prince Evilo and his Devil's Dozen. And I'll be honest, it's a little confusing because he talks about a Devil's Dozen, but then summons his four top lieutenants. I'm not sure if they're part of the Dozen or not, but we've got an old hag who looks like a witch on a jet broom. We've got Wild Huntsman, who's a centaur looking like he's fresh out of a Robin Hood story, to be honest. We've got Sugyn, S-U-G-Y-N, man, I wish they had pronunciation guys, who, the caption tells me, he looks like a hero of a Welsh tale. He looks like, frankly, he could be from Asgard, as far as I could tell. And then the final of the lieutenants is Apollo, who seems to be glowing. He's the epitome of the Greek god, complete with the lyre and such, which is the musical instrument. I'm not saying he is a lyre, although he probably is too. He's an evil guy. Anyways. And then we spend a little bit of time showing they don't get along, they've got to fight amongst themselves, whatever. But Evilo is able to get them to come together and stuff, at least long enough to send Apollo and a couple of the Devil's Dozen to go rob the central branch of the Interplanetary Bank. And we learn that this Planetary Bank's main branch is, it seems like, out in the middle of nowhere, literally like in an asteroid spaceport or something. It's got all these wild creatures protecting it. Apollo is able to use the music of his lyre to mellow them out so they don't attack. They walk into the bank, and apparently everybody from Apollo's planet, all the men, they have this irresistible charm on women. So the lady tellers are like, oh, here's all the money. Sure, have at it. What more can I do for you? Which is a little over the top and convenient. But the Legion arrives. Apollo has those guard creatures attack the Legion. This is where we learn that Surprise can fly. And even though he's been inducted into the Legion, they haven't had time to give him a flight ring yet. So he can fly. Now, as they're wont to do with these sorts of things, we've got to get explanations on what these kinds of fantastical creatures are, because that's, I mean, half the fun of this era of the Legion. And Colossal Boy goes up against a Jigsaw creature that's really not a creature, but four animals attracted to each other in some weird way that act as one. And one's like the legs, one's like the tail, one's like the torso, the other's like a flying head or something. It's really bizarre. Very inventive, I'll give him that. And Colossal Boy's not doing all that great because they're tag-teaming him, but he realizes if he times it right, and he does, he shrinks down, gets out of the way, dodges the hits, and the various, I'm going to say body parts, but different animals of the gestalt or whatever, have now hit each other, and they're fighting amongst themselves, which he finds quite funny. And entertaining, but again, it's again, how wild can we create a creature and whatnot. Surprise goes up against the Loudspeaker Beast. I'm going to assume that this is a name given by the storyteller and not necessarily the in-universe name, because it's a little on the nose. This creature has a big horn-like snout kind of a thing. Surprise in his armor just turns off the earphones, sends out a counter signal to not make everybody else go deaf. He flies above it, lands on it, knocks it out with a single punch, and Colossal Boy's like, wow, this guy's powerful. He could be as strong as Superboy. Again, setting the mystery or the clues of who is Surprise and mysterious. Chameleon Boy goes up against the Asteroid Serpent that has multiple eyes that vaporized its prey into gaseous food so they can inhale the calories, which, if it's an asteroid serpent in airless space, I don't know how that works, but whatever. He basically just has to dodge it, and he turns into a spider and webs the thing up, but the eyes are still pointing out, so I'm not sure how that defeated him. But anyways, the notable part about this is not that Chameleon Boy turned into a Chameleon Boy-headed giant spider, but after he has taken out said serpent, we have a panel that breaks the fourth wall. He literally says, in case a certain web-headed character thinks I'm stealing his thunder, I'd like to remind him I was changing into all sorts of weird shapes long before he walked up his first wall, and winks at the camera. Now, it's Kurt Swan. This kind of winking at the camera kind of a thing we've seen in the Superman comics a bunch in this era. It still feels a little out of place in the Legion. It's not often in the Legion I think we get this breaking of the fourth wall. We then have Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl, who had been sent in by Surprise while they were going to take care of the monsters, or the creatures, I should say. Monsters is so pejorative. Anyways, he had sent those two in to take care of the bank robbers. They get in there, they deal with what I am assuming is part of the Devil's Dozen, and Lightning Lad's able to kind of knock one out with lightning. Saturn Girl takes two of them out, or traps two of them with ring money from her homeworld of Saturn. Its inner edge is made of a rare mineral, Arctite? I can't tell. That's super cold. So she, like, tosses the rings on them, like, hula hoops or whatever, and they, like, freeze up or something. It's very bizarre. And one of the running gags in this bit with the bank robbery is the constant, oh, this weird thing is used for money on this planet, this weird thing's used over there. We'll get to that in a second. Apollo and Saturn Girl meet. She uses her telepathic power to find out his name and that he's just a space hijacker and he's irresistible to girls. But she's got her mental defenses up and basically does start to charm her. And as he's doing that, he's, here, let me give you this as a token of my esteem or whatever. And Lightning Lad's, oh, don't touch it. It could be a trap. Sure enough, it is, but it's a trap for him because the rare cash in here are crystal creatures used as cash on Rojun, and they feed on metal like piranha feed on flesh. And of course, Lightning Lad grabbed it with his right arm, which is robotic, and they're like, they're going to eat the whole thing apart unless I shock them. And oh, conveniently, these living crystals can short-circuit anything electrical, including Lightning Lad, it seems. So Apollo, between panels, releases his men. Those three guys and Apollo dart off with Lightning Lad as a kidnapped legionnaire, which seems to have been their mission. And while Surprise is sorry they couldn't do anything about that, Saturn Girl is wondering, well, he sent us into the bank. Maybe he knew about the trap. So again, setting the can we trust these characters or not. We get back to the Legion headquarters. They get a call from the richest man in the universe. And as soon as they get the information from the guy, Invisible Kid sends out Cosmic Boy Pharaoh Lad and Matter Eater Lad to take care of it. Pharaoh Lad's kind of curious, well, how does this rich guy rate this sort of a service? And there's a quick line of, he's the guy who's funding the Legion. And Mysterious says, I'm going to join in on that. And Invisible Kid's like, well, only because Supergirl vouched for you. And there's still, again, this trust and mystery of who are they. And we get this conversation between Mon-El and Ultra Boy of Surprise could have been on the trap, and it looked like he had super strength, flying ability, as powerful as Superboy. So maybe they could be Superboy and Supergirl, but they shouldn't remember the Legion now. How could that be? Then there's the supposition, well, maybe they turned evil or something. So Ultra Boy is going to use his penetravision to see through the lead masks. And Invisible Kid's like, no, you can't. We promised. And Ultra Boy's like, no, you promised. He's looking at it, and I'll find out who they really is. And end of part two. So we've got kind of that cliffhanger question of who are those new members, and why did the Devil's Dozen snatch Lightning Lad? All of which are to be answered next issue. Now, that tycoon, I'm pretty sure, although he's not named as such, but he's the richest man in the universe. He's got speed dial access to the Legion. And they come a-running. He's the guy who's funding the Legion. This is R.J. Brandt. So this is technically his first appearance, even though he's not named as such. So quite a bit happens here. There is the question again of who are these characters of Mysterious and Surprise. Are they familiar faces? Are they new? Are they robots? Are they Superboy and Supergirl? Are they somebody else? They seem to like this kind of mystery characters and stuff. And I've got mixed feelings about it. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's not so much. I don't mind these two, but I really wish there was a color scheme to the outfits other than gray medieval armor with really weird robot-type helmet. But this is one of those cases, as we're starting to see a little more in Legion, where a story not only goes for the two parts of the issue, but continues into the next, giving it a bigger tapestry to work on. I felt quite a bit happened here, and not a bunch happened here, because really, the first part was just getting two characters out of Legion. Second part was introducing two and having a little mini-adventure at the bank robbery and such, and furthering the mystery of who are the two new characters. So at a high level, not much happened, but there's enough... Minutia's not quite the right word, but there's enough things happening that it doesn't feel like it's either glossed over or decompressed or anything of the sort. So there's a lot to go on and read and enjoy and stuff. So while I don't think this is the apex of Legion storytelling for me, I really got to say that's somewhere in the late 70s, early 80s. but we've gotten out of kind of that slideshow mentality that we've had in some past issues, although we still get it in one or two places where some things happen between panels that I was surprised they didn't spend a little more time on. But it's still some good stuff. E. Nelson Bridwell, a longtime figure at DC, so looking forward to the next issue and seeing how, I mean, I know how some of this plays out, but I'm looking at how it plays out in the story versus what I know of having just a knowledge of Legion history and stuff. Because while there are some of these issues, like the upcoming Fatal Five stuff that I've read reprints of in the past, some of these things, like the first adventure here with Surprise and Mysterious, I've never actually read. I know what has happened because of comments in other issues, flashbacks, and kind of the Cliff Notes version of it, but to actually see it play out is kind of a lot of fun. Anyways, that is Part 2, The Devil's Dozen, from Adventure Comics 350. Next up is Adventure Comics 351 in Part 1, The Forgotten Legion. It was released on October 27th, 1966, written by E. Nelson Bridwell and art by Kurt Swan. 12-page story with a full-page interior cover, and this is continuing the story from the previous issue. Now, the interior cover shows Supergirl having the Legion of Super Pets fight the Legion of Substitute Heroes. That all happens in the second chapter, not here. But it's basically saying that everybody's getting called in and all sorts of stuff's going on. Which, for the second part, is actually, I think, a fairly accurate statement, because it's crazy. This first part picks up on the events of the final page of the previous issue. R.J. Brand needs the Legion's help. Now, he's called R.J. Brands with an S at the end here. He's usually known as just R.J. Brand, B-R-A-N-D-E, without the S there. So I don't know if that was a typo, lettering mistake, or what. We've seen a couple of those sorts of things at this point, because all of this stuff was done by hand. Computers were ways away from being used for comic production by a couple of decades. Anyways, Cosmic Boy, Feral Lad, Mad Reader Lad, and Mysterious are sent to go help R.J. Brand, and we get reminded that Mon-El doesn't trust Surprise and Mysterious. Again, this is kind of a recap of the end of the last issue, slightly different in a second, though, because Ultra Boy's about to use his penetrative vision to see who Surprise and Mysterious are when Invisible Kid slugs Ultra Boy in the jaw, telling him he'll have no insubordination. When the leader makes a promise for the Legion, every member keeps it. Ultra Boy basically says okay. And he thinks, Ultra Boy, that Surprise and Mysterious could be Superboy and Supergirl. And we get a quick recap of the whole kryptonite cloud that forced Superboy and Supergirl out of the Legion, how the Legion had to use kryptonite capsules to remove their memory of the Legions, and that Ultra Boy is still suspicious of Surprise, because, you know, maybe they've turned evil or something. But Surprise tells Ultra Boy that he has a good reason to hide his identity, just as Ultra Boy had when he let himself get branded a traitor to the Legion way back when. Now, Cosmic Boy's team approaches the Brand Estate, which is a small planet. I mean, not a big one. The guy's not a show-off or anything. I mean, come on. And Mysterious says that the Hag has used her magic to jam the defenses of the planet. And they notice that Mysterious can fly, even though the Legion hasn't given her a flight ring. Now, some of this happens in outer space, so they've got to get into their spacesuits, and Matter Eater Lad is having a hard time getting into his spacesuit, because back at Adventure Comics 345, he got hit by a ray that basically inflated him, made him look almost like Bouncing Boy to a degree. He doesn't look quite that large now, but he's still much larger than he is used to being. And it turns out neither Mysterious, who's in armor, nor Feral Lad, who can turn into lead, needs spacesuits. They do have a comment that Feral Lad has a radio inside his mask that allows him to communicate, etc. Still wondering about that whole breathing thing in space, but whatever. They have a little adventure there and make it into the atmosphere, encounter these prison robots who are able to entrap them in a cage made by wires from their fingers or something, but not a big deal. Mad Reader Lad can eat them and escape because, well, that's what he does. Now, we cut to Lightning Lad, who last issue was taken captive. He wakes up, most of his robotic arm is destroyed. He meets Evilo, the leader of the Devil's Dozen. Now, it turns out only four of the Devil's Dozen has powers, and we met them last issue, Apollo being the one who had taken Lightning Lad. And Evilo is planning to make more powered members of the Devil's Dozen, starting with Lightning Lad. He's basically going to have these creatures of concentrated evil possess Lightning Lad. And the plan seems to work. Lightning Lad seems to turn evil. So Evilo's going to have his doctor, Zan Orbal, do something about replacing Lightning Lad's robotic arm, because, I mean, he's no good with just one arm. Lightning Lad gets a little offended by that. Turns out he was faking it. He decks Evilo with the one arm he's got. And he's like, how did you not get corrupted? And he's like, oh, I concentrated on the heroic deeds of the Legion to avoid being corrupted. Because apparently that's all it takes. And Lightning Lad grabs Evilo's gun. Evilo tricks Lightning Lad into shooting him with it, because Lightning Lad hasn't recharged from being short-circuited last issue when he was taken by Apollo. But that blast from Evilo's gun empowers Evilo, causes him to grow devil horns, because again, devil's dozen, gotta stay on brand. And from those horns, he shoots a blast of darkness at Lightning Lad, and basically has the guards take him away. Now, Cosmic Boy, Matter Eater Lad, Feral Lad, and Mysterious encounter the hag, who seems to hex them with portraits of their future fate. This whole bit was a little just kind of weird and confusing. A Feral Lad looks like he's going to get melted. Mysterious seems to be unharmed, causing people to suspect, is she in cahoots with the bad guys? And Mysterious doesn't let Cosmic Boy see his fate because it's too dreadful. Spoiler, they never follow up on that. And she says the only way to fight black magic is with white magic. And she needs to brew something boiled in iron and stirred in lead. And Cosmic Boy can take care of the steel. He basically crashes one of the satellite defenses. That gives them what they need. Feral Lad shapes it into a cauldron. Mysterious then says she needs a lock of hair from a genuine magician and the print of an enchanted shoe. Cosmic Boy's like, yeah, we're not going to find that here. So he calls to the Legion clubhouse, tells them they need that. Monel's like, well, we'll see what we can do. They think about it at the clubhouse. Element Lad says, well, if we got a lock of Mitzyetz Pitalik's hair, that would suffice. And Satin Girl says, the print of an enchanted shoe, they can find that in Supergirl's time. But it'll probably take all the Legionnaires they've got here to get the hair, so they ask the subs to go to Supergirl's time and take care of that. Cut to the subs at their cave headquarters. They're mastering their powers, and honestly, seem to be doing pretty well with it for the most part. I mean, Stone Boy just still turns into stone, so he hadn't really improved at all, but the rest seem pretty good. What's interesting is Color Kid has joined the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Now, Color Kid tried out for the Legion in Adventure Comics 342, didn't make it in, but Brainiac 5 suggested he try going and joining the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Apparently he does, he's with the subs, and it's interesting because at the end of Adventure Comics 342, Color Kid isn't seen with the subs who are at the end of that issue when it's revealed that Dream Girl has joined the subs and Starboy does join the subs. So whether Color Kid had joined after that, before that, don't know, but he's with them now. End of part one. Honestly, they do a lot, but I wouldn't say anything overly significant happens. Color Kid joins the Legion of Substitute Heroes. That's the kind of thing that would be at least a footnote in the history of the subs, possibly not the Legion, but worth noting. So, once again, that's part one, The Forgotten Legion, from Adventure Comics 351. Next up, also from Adventure Comics 351, is part two, The Faces Behind the Masks. Same creative team, E. Nielsen Bridwell, Kurt Swan on the art, 12 pages of story. And what I love is at the top of this, where it's got the part two and the thing, on the two sides of that header is Mysterious and Surprise kind of taking their helmets off and only revealing, like, the jaw in their mouth. So they're Caucasian, that's all we know, which honestly doesn't limit it much in this era of the Legion, because almost everybody is Caucasian except for, well, really, I think Brainiac 5 is the most notable exception with the green skin. Anyways, Saturn Girl, Mon-El, Element Lad, Colossal Boy, and Princess Projectra head to Superboy's time in a time bubble. Apparently they've gotten the time bubbles fixed since the last storyline. And they leave Chuck Tane in charge. He's a reservist. You probably remember him best as Bouncing Boy, but he's got no powers, so Bouncing Less Boy, I guess. Anyways, they head back in time to Smallville. They are looking for Superboy. They find Clark is at Smallville High in class. They cause a distraction by placing the Legion Clubhouse outside of Smallville High. Little surprising, given they just left Chuck at it in the future. Of course, Superboy doesn't recognize the Legion because the kryptonite capsule, which they have kind of conveniently forgotten about for a second. And then Superboy is about to go off and clean up. Smallville saying, if that thing's still here, referring to the clubhouse, I'll dismantle it myself when I get back. And Element Lad's, don't worry, I've got this. And it looks like he's shooting I-beams at the back of Superboy's head. And how they depict the powers working does change over time, because it's Element Lad's powers don't usually seem to be an I-beam. Anyways, he turns the kryptonite in Superboy's head to helium. Superboy instantly remembers the Legion, and it's like, what you doing here? How can I help? It turns out the headquarters, or the clubhouse there, was an illusion from Princess Projectra, which, given this is the first time she's on a mission actually doing something, I think, unless I've already forgotten one or two, because she's only been in the thing for a few issues, it was easy for me to forget. When I was first reading, I'm like, how did they get the clubhouse here? Okay, got it. And they basically tell him that they need a lock of Mitz-Yetz Pitalik's hair. And he's like, well, I know how to travel between dimensions, but Mon-El's the only one here that's got that kind of a power, so the two of them head off to the fifth dimension. Now, Mitz-Yetz Pitalik is monitoring Smallville, so he knows Superboy's coming and why, and decides to have a little fun with Superboy. So when they get there to take his hair, all the clippers and stuff, he hands Superboy, yeah, here, clips them off. One turns into an alligator, one into a toad, one into a snake and whatnot. And then when he stops horsing around with that, the clippers he used, which look like hedge clippers, snap in half like they would normally do on Superboy's invulnerable hair. And while he's having all this fun with Superboy, Mon-El's kind of sitting in the background, realizes that the imp has made his hair steel to seem invulnerable and stuff. But using his heat vision, he can melt some off. They get what they need. So they head back, and of course, how do you leave the fifth dimension? You say your name backwards, just as that's what causes Mitz-Yetz Pitalik to return to the fifth dimension, is saying his name backwards. So we get Danag Rao and Lilac, which is Largan and Kal-El backwards, and poof, they head back. We spend all of a panel back in Smallville with the Legion in the time bubble leaving, saying so long, and now that Element's Lad turned that helium back into kryptonite, you'll be forgetting us in a few minutes. And Superboy's like, well, give my regards to Surprise. So clearly Superboy and Supergirl had somehow arranged Surprise and Mysterious. Spoiler, they don't really reveal that. Or if they did, I completely missed it, so I'm pretty sure they didn't. Anyways, cut to the 30th century. We've got Chuck Tane, who's been in charge of emergency calls and whatever else comes up at the clubhouse. And that drunken Welsh hero guy, S-U-G-Y-N, I have no idea how to pronounce this. He seems to be drinking up the entire Metropolis Reservoir. And of course, Chuck, he flies there because he's still got his flight ring, but he's no match for, well, really just about anybody with any powers. And this guy, he's drunken a lot. He sprays him with water and knocks him out of the sky or whatever. Takes Chuck captive, presents him to Evilo saying, I have captured you, a Legionnaire. Because, you know, he's trying to make more of the devil's dozen out of superpowered individuals. And he's like, you idiot, this one doesn't have any powers. He's useless to me. Get rid of him. And he's like, no, but he flew. He's like, he's got a flight ring. So Evilo banishes this Welsh guy to the realms of darkness. I don't know if we ever see him again. Honestly, I'm fine if we don't. I've not been impressed by the guy. So all of that happens, and we cut to the subs who have arrived at Stanhope College in 1966 looking for Supergirl. Fire Lad is able to kind of shoot his flame breath out to get her attention. She comes. Of course, she has no idea who they are. And of course, the subs haven't, I guess, fully gotten told the story of the kryptonite. They don't remember all that stuff because they're a little puzzled by this. But it's like, hey, we need the imprint of an enchanted juke. Can you call your super horse? And she's like, well, yeah. But she gives Comet some instructions. So when Comet comes, he comes with the rest of the Legion of Super Pets. Now, I'm not sure how Supergirl knows of the Legion of Super Pets if she can't remember the Legion of Superheroes or the Legion of Substitute Heroes. But she does. And she basically has the pets attack the subs. And Comet's like, well, I recognize them as the Substitute Heroes, but if Supergirl says they're phonies, I guess I should attack. So they do. And, of course, a Kryptonian-powered cat, dog, and monkey are a lot more than the subs can handle, which isn't too surprising. But they have some quick thinking. Color Kid turns Stone Boy a luminous green, so he seems to be glowing. That scares off Beepo and Crypto, thinking Stone Boy is Kryptonite now. Streaky, however, isn't from Krypton, doesn't have Kryptonite weakness, doesn't flee, but Chlorophyll Kid tosses out some catnip seeds, super grows them, that distracts Streaky, she's out of action. This leaves Comet, Comet comes a-charging, the guys in the subs pretty much dodge, Nightgirl grabs some of the sidewalk, uses that to block the charging Comet, and Supergirl's like, well, I'm not going to help you and stuff, and Supergirl and Comet just take off. And the subs are like, oh, jeez, we blew it. You know, we're never going to be first-class heroes. Nightgirl's like, well, look at these hoof prints I've got in the part of the sidewalk I used. So there's a line of dialogue implying they fix the sidewalk before they leave, because, I mean, they're heroes. But they head back to the future, and we then cut to the other Legion team bringing both the hair and the horse hooves, because at this point, I guess the subs are kind of excused from the story. They've done their part. And Mysterious mentions that a centaur kidnapped Mad Reader Lad. That was the wild huntsman we'd seen in the first part of the previous issue. So they're not really doing a great job kind of reasserting the Devil's Dozen and stuff, although they've clarified how there's a dozen and who has powers, whatnot. But if you'd missed the first part, you've got to take some of this just on faith. But honestly, there have been enough stories where there wasn't a previous part to show what had happened, and we just get told certain things happen that not a big deal. So as Mysterious is putting this brew together, the hag shows up, and she's got a spell to cast on them, and Mysterious basically beats her to the punch and casts her spell with the brew, using the arm of her armor to stir it, and that met that criteria and such. And it's basically to restore the hag to her natural form, which is a quote-unquote gorgeous girl, according to Ferroled. It's the White Witch of the planet Naltor. And of course, Cosmic Boy recognizes Naltor as the home of Dream Girl. Off comes Mysterious's helmet. She reveals, yes, I am indeed Dream Girl. I joined Legion once under false pretenses, lied about the superpower, so I had to resign. Surprise takes his helmet off and says, I am Star Boy, the guy you expelled for killing somebody even though it was in self-defense. And Dream Girl's sister is the White Witch here, who would been transformed by Evilo, the evil essence and all that stuff he tried to do with Lightning Lad. It worked on her. But apparently, White Witch had taught Dream Girl enough magic and spells that she figured out how to change her back if she could find her, hence joining the Legion, and Starboy insisted on helping and designed the lead armor for the two of them. There's a quick question of, well, how did you fake the superpowers? They had the flight rings because they were former Legionnaires and they got to keep them. They didn't really have super strength. Starboy just made something super heavy. Mysterious didn't have supervision and stuff. She had precognition and could just say what she needed to say when the time was right. And they're like, well, I guess we'll have to leave Legion again. And Invisible Kid's like, no, you can stay. Kind of convenient, but okay. This rather large assemblage of Legionnaires heads to Evilo's place to go rescue their friends. And Evilo says his doctor has been experimenting on them. Wait until you see what he has done to them. And there's this great panel of, oh, great stars, I can't believe it. How could anyone do that? Bottom it says, continued on second page of following. So you know how in comics, they'll end on a page of a big moment, and you get the page flip? Well, back when this era of comics was happening, there would often be continued on second or third page following, because there'd be double page ad or two sometimes putting it off. So here you had not one page flip, but two, before you realize that Lightning Lad now has two arms, Mad Reader Lad is his old skinny self, and Bouncing Boy is fat again with his powers restored. Well, it turns out this doctor found a serum that can grow new limbs, had one for instant weight reduction, and even was able to recreate the fluid that first gave Bouncing Boy his powers, so three Legionnaires are back to how they ought to be. Evilo realizes this is not what he was expecting, and the doctor's basically turned on him, so he runs outside, calls for Apollo, the Wild Huntsman, and the rest of the Devil's Dozen, because the docs double-crossed him, go fight the Legion. The Legion makes pretty short work of them. What I loved about this was there's a scene where Cosmic Boy is using his magnetic powers to repel Ferrolad, turning him into, literally, you're a human cannonball. This is shades of the X-Men Fastball Special, which first appeared in X-Men issue 100, in 1976. This is a decade earlier. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that X-Men was inspired by this, just saying they certainly had the time. And, of course, Lightning Lad, now having two good arms, is able to zap Evil-O before he can use his horn powers. And the Doctor explains why he turned on the guy, because it turns out this Doctor was one of Evil-O's first guinea pigs. He takes off this flesh-like mask and shows a very alien, almost reptilian-looking face or whatever that's got the nose above the eyes and all kinds of stuff. And he's like, my serums could help others, but they could never restore my human features. And that's why he wanted revenge on the guy. We then cut to the Legion headquarters. They're having a meeting after the criminals have apparently been turned over to the science police. A lot can happen in a caption in comics at this point. Just saying. In walks Superboy and Supergirl asking, can we come in or is this a closed meeting? And they're like, how? How do you get your memory back? What about the kryptonite cloud? What's going on? Come outside. We'll show you. Well, that green cloud that was there last issue, they couldn't do anything about. It's blue now. Color Kid has turned the kryptonite blue. Blue kryptonite has no effect on Kryptonians. Color Kid also mentions he used the same approach to change the green kryptonite in their heads to blue, restored their memories. So Superboy, Supergirl, Bouncing Boy, Dream Girl, and Star Boy are all back in the Legion at this point. End of part two, end of issue. Now, this is a crazy amount of stuff to have happen. You've got five people back in the team, three people having undergone transformations of Lightning Lad, Mad Reader Lad, and Bouncing Boy. And if you add in the first part of the story in the previous issue, the first two parts, Superboy and Supergirl had gotten honorably discharged. They had their memories wiped. We got the first appearance of Surprise and Mysterious, both of whom joined the Legion. We get the first appearance of RJ Brand. We get the unmasking of Surprise and Mysterious. Any one of those things would have had the story it happened in worthy of being a footnote in the overall history of the Legion. It's kind of crazy just how much happened in two issues, how much of it happened in this last part here. All of this is why that Batch SW6 stuff I talked about last time, those characters, had to come from before this story in Adventure Comics 350 and 351. They recognized Universo, so it had to come after Adventure Comics 349, which is Universal's first appearance. And if it was after this, Lightning Lad would have had both arms and not been surprised by that. We would have had Dream Girl and Star Boy in the Legion, so they should have been part of the group and stuff, and that wasn't the case. So that pretty much seems to lock in when the SW6 characters would have come from. Now, of course, I reserve the right to reassess all of that when I get up to those stories that introduced and feature those characters, but that happens in the 90s. I'm still working my way through the 60s, so that's going to be a while. Anyways, once again, that was part two, The Faces Behind the Masks from Adventure Comics 351.
Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.